Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. We are so glad that you're with us here today. When I say us, I'm talking about two people I love getting to do this program with because they're really smart and really wise.
At first, thought he was just going to say two people I love. And yeah, I hope that's true, too.
No, but you love Jesus, and you're really smart and wise, and you've been around the block a few times. And I'm talking about Milan Yurkovich and Dr. Alice Benton. Hi, guys. Mm-hmm. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And we love you, too.
Well, thank you. I love that. You know, I want to tell you guys something that I think phrases can change lives. Hmm. This just might be me, but here's a phrase. I just one day had this thought, I've had my share, and I never drank again. That was over 10 years ago. It just was a phrase, a thought, I've had my share, and so I wanted to be sure that, you know, that alcohol would never interfere with my life. And sometimes when you get older, you know, chemistry changes. So I said, I think I've had my share. Another great phrase that can change a person's life is this. It's time. I want you to think about that. In your life, is it time? Is it time to start doing something different? Is it time that you finally get your act together or move on? I just think that can be one of the most powerful things that a person can say to themselves and to God and to others. It's time. Now, here's the thing. The thing about it's time is so powerful because it doesn't refer to tomorrow, because tomorrow never comes, as we know. But it's time is saying, I'm going to do something starting right now. Do you guys have any phrases like that, or do you... Is that just me trying to simplify all of life down into a phrase?
You know, I love Larry the Cable Guy's line.
Me too, whatever it is.
Get her done. Get her done. And yeah. Just it keeps me from procrastinating. You just got to get her done. And it's important to not just stare at things, and because they'll never get changed in any way. But you just keep moving and get stuff done.
Mm-hmm. And you know, here's the other thing, that yesterday on the program we were talking about fatal excuses.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these really intricate things that you use to not get her done. You know, like, well, you know, that might not work, whatever. But you got to get those out of your head, too. Alice, I think... You know, therapy is a little bit deeper than phrases, but sometimes we need something, I think, to latch on to.
We do. One that's been really helpful for me is do the hard thing first. Hmm. I would love to put those harder things off for days and weeks and years, but the more I've tried to step into that, the more relief I feel and the more peace I feel. I hate stepping into the hard things, but it helps with all the rest if I'll do that first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a lot of times over the years with Every Man's Battle, there's always this argument. Somebody might, well, you know, that's not really pornography. You know, okay, so forget that question or issue. Here's the question. Is it pure? Is it pure? Or does it, like 2 Timothy 2:22 says, stir up youthful lust? Because it's not pure. That's the question. Because purity is the standard. Truth is the foundation. Based on those two things, we're going to give some truth, and we're going to give some standards and clarity to some real-life situations right after this. You're listening to New Life Live. Hey, tomorrow, Finding Freedom, Southern California. You could still go and by Sunday be free of some things. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and say, hey, is this for me? Maybe it is. Maybe it's time.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Alice Benton, Mylon Yurkovich. You know, I love the commercials for insurance. They're some of the best. And these Mayhem commercials are really great. And there's
one
where the guy he's playing the part of the mother-in-law sitting there in the front seat. And, you know, it just reminds me, all of us have these people that can create mayhem in our lives. And I think God many times uses them to surprise us or to grow our character,
right,
or whatever it is. And so if you got some mayhem in your life and you need some help in how to deal with that, you know, it all begins with surrendering it to God. But also we could help you with that at Finding Freedom. Because not everybody married the prince or the princess or whatever it was you thought you were marrying. And you need some additional help. How do I deal with this person so that we might be able to have a redemptive connecting relationship? We could help you with that at Finding Freedom. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hey, there's a new book title for you.
What is it?
I Thought I Married a Prince. Turned out to be a frog.
There you, I think it's...
Toad.
Yeah. You know. Maybe. All right. Well, and you'd want to read this before you croak would be the subtitle.
Oh, nice.
That? All right.
It would be riveting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You beat me on that one. All right, let's jump over here to Sarah Crestnut Hill, Pennsylvania, WFIL. Sarah, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. I just like that joke.
Thank you. Well, how could we help today? What's going on? What's going on with you today?
Real quickly, I'm a widow. Hmm. 2009, my husband died. And in 1998, somewhere around there, I found out he was cheating and everything. And he was, you know, he was drinking all of his life. And he was one of those alcoholics where he could drink a ton of drinks, but seemed to be normal. So he's normalizing that. I've been going to a counselor in a secular medical center, but he happened to be a pastor. And once I revealed how my faith and my whole body, soul, and spirit was part of this, we went to a direction of, you know, also putting that into my therapy.
Sure.
Okay. What's the question for us then?
Okay. So, in this time, after finding out that I stayed on, I had an affair, he had many, but we recommitted ourselves at one point, he continued. So, when he died, his brother said to me, you know, sorry for your loss, but, you know, I was talking to him, and he says, well, he was doing that from day one of your marriage. So now, a couple of years later, I retire, and a little bit before I turned retire, I kind of woke up in my house, and I said, what the hell happened to my house? It was so cluttered, and I'm digging out of clutter right now. And I'm working on that with my therapist, but there's also a part of me that still needs to deal with my husband, with me, not my husband. I mean, he's in the grave. He may be in heaven. He may be somewhere else. I have no idea. So it's getting through the clutter, getting through the daily stuff. And I have adult children.
What's the question? What's the question for us?
How do I deal with all this stuff overwhelming me? The cluttering, the just going through life. I mean, how do I don't really know how to put it into words. It's just that the grief is still there, and having to deal with what I have to do in the house. I mean, you left me with a lot of debt and things like that. That's over with.
All right, so we're going to let us try to help you. Let us try to help you with the way that we possibly can help you. I want to talk about his drinking in a minute. But so, guys, clutter. You wake up one day and you realize, wow, something has happened to my house and I never dreamed it could ever be me. Well, what's her first step in the dilemma of being engulfed by clutter?
Sarah, I want you to know that you are not alone in having this multi-layered problem and that some of it presents in the clutter of your home. I have worked with so many women who have similar stories and similar current struggles, and it's almost like the clutter in the home is some sort of a physical representation of all that emotional clutter and the emotional baggage that we have. I noticed that you said, I know I need to deal with my husband. And then you dismissed it. And you said, I mean, deal with myself. And I agree with you. Of course you have to deal with yourself. But I think there is still so much damage that your husband did. And he's certainly not the only one that did damage to your heart and your soul. And even though he has passed away, and other perpetrators in your life may have also passed away, I hope, I'm so glad you're with a therapist, and I hope that therapist is helping you to deal directly with these people, dead or alive, in all this hurt that they have caused you. It's like you still need to have your day in court where you get to be angry that your husband mistreated you, possibly from the first day of your marriage, and even dealing with your brother-in-law revealing that to you after your husband's death. You have a lot of reason to be angry, to be indignant with possibly with God and with a lot of these men in your life. And so I hope you continue to tell your story, express and process those emotions as you're dealing right in kind of in parallel with the clutter in your home. And it's, we were talking about phrases. It's one day at a time, and it's just the next right thing. It has to be broken down into bite-sized pieces like that.
Mylon, any thoughts here on...
I was just saying, and one thing I am doing is one box, one bag at a time, and the relief it gives me every time I go through one thing.
Oh, yes.
Great. And you know what? When you come to something that you really want to never forget, but you know you need it out of the house, it's clutter. You take a picture of it, and now you'll never forget it, but you still have the memory of it. That can really help you. Mylon, your thoughts here?
Well, I love where Steve, you and Alice are going on this. It's those are some great insights and comments about being able to really bring your emotions out fully onto the table instead of holding them inside. But I would also do work, and what that means is if I'm thinking about my husband, I'm thinking about my history, I'm thinking about his history, our marriage history. But I would go one step further, and I would look at my history prior to marrying this husband, and I would ask, how chaotic was that? How disorganized was that? How traumatic was that? Because
I've looked at that.
Well, we need to keep looking at it, because I find as I continue to process and do my own work in my own life, new things pop up, new things that I hadn't thought of in a long time. But as we clean out our history and face it and then have the appropriate emotions in community about that event, we clean things out, and then we have less external manifestations. The, as Alice was saying, the potential for just simplifying my life is much more obtainable.
Okay. Now, Sarah, I want to talk to you about something just for the greater good here. When you said to your husband he was one of those alcoholics, I'm going to tell you something that therapists won't tell you. And there's so many things that therapists know that I don't. But this is something that I do know, and many of them would disagree with because they haven't had this training. But I've worked with alcoholics, and here's the number, since 1977. And there's only one thing that they've all had in common. It was what your husband, he wasn't just one of those kind that could drink a lot. That's what alcoholism is. Mm. It's a person who can drink more alcohol than most people can. And if you can drink a half of a bottle of vodka or a pint of whiskey or a whole bottle of whiskey, your body, whether you're acting normal or not, there's a physiological thing taking place in your body. You become addicted to the alcohol. You can't drink that much and not be addicted. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're acting normal. A psychologist wants to know why you started drinking. Well, 30 years after you're addicted to alcohol, the why has a lot less value than all the experiences that have happened over the past 30 years and how you're going to stop. And so what I'm trying to help people understand in dealing with an alcoholic is that it doesn't matter how normal they act or the excuses they give you. If you can drink a lot of alcohol, a couple of six packs of beer, these kind of things, and then feel great about yourself because you're not drunk, you're the alcoholic. And a lot of young people, they're the one, hey, you drive home, you never look like you're affected by alcohol. That's the person that is our budding alcoholic. Now, so why am I saying this to you? Because I don't want you thinking that he was miserable because of you or whatever. He got addicted to the chemical, and he never, ever got over that. And when you've got this kind of alcohol pumping through your veins, your brain gets toxic. It doesn't work well. You could even be a minister who has multiple affairs and his wife even find out about it, and it doesn't stop you. So just a little note right there. Now, here's what I would love for you to do. I'd love for you to come to Finding Freedom, if you could, of course. But I'm going to send you the Emotional Freedom Workbook, and I'd love for you to work through that and see if that might be some kind of help for you. I've got another book, Understanding and Loving a Person with Chemical Addiction, and it will help you resolve the issues with him so you can get back your life and be free from all this stuff. Here's the thing. Here's the deal, people. Don't just continue to do what you've been doing. Let's get some help. Let's do something different that might open the door to a whole new way of living. Let's go to Ann, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, WBYN, yeah, the great station there. How you doing, and how could we help today?
I'm doing great in many ways. I thank you for taking my call. My situation is such that I've been pretty happily married about 40 years, have wonderful children, all very successful, and everyone sees my husband as, you know, just a stand-up kind of guy, easygoing. They never see that ugly side of him that comes out, and I feel like his whipping boy, not in a literal sense, he doesn't hit, but the yelling and the screaming all comes down upon me. And I often try different approaches. I try a quiet approach. I try, an angry retort. I try not to say anything and just remove myself from the room. But it doesn't matter. His anger is so great at that time that he can't just stop it. And he's aware.
How old is he?
He is 69.
69, okay.
Yes.
Well, I would say this to just get it started. Sometimes signs of infancy don't show up until we get into our late 60s.
Oh.
And so we find a grown man entering into temper tantrums that usually are reserved for toddlers and that particular age. And so no parent would allow their toddler to just throw a temper tantrum in a store or in public or at home. You would respond and react to that. You wouldn't cower if a two-year-old got upset and started banging its fists on the floor or yelling or screaming at you. You'd have a response as an adult. Mm-hmm. So when we come back, I want us to help you have an adult response to a 69-year-old man who has re-entered infancy and is having temper tantrums, and as you say, you've become his kicking boy or
exactly.
post or whatever. I'm so sorry you're going through this. He is one angry little boy. Here we go.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here talking with Ann. And Ann, I mentioned this re-entering infancy.
Yes.
Is your husband retired?
Not officially. He still works. And I think part of it is... He definitely is ADHD. I can see that. But that didn't always affect him as badly as now. And I think he gets overtired sometimes, overstimulated.
Well, let me tell you some things that older guys can get angry at.
Okay.
They wonder, am I still a man? Because they have some weaknesses or struggles they didn't have when they were younger. Am I more than just a paycheck or the salary, the investments that I've accumulated, because sometimes we don't have any. Am I more than just a role in somebody's life, they start to ask. Here's a big one. Can I live with my limitations here? And so if I'm obsessing over my limitations versus adjusting to them, I'm angry. So one of the things a guy like this has to do is he's got to go through some grieving and some anger over the losses and the things that he hasn't accomplished in life or the things that he's missing or thinks he's missing before he can resolve that anger. And so I'm going to send you a little book called Six Ways That a Man Can Thrive During Midlife. Now, you could say if he lives to be 100, he's at midlife. He's a little bit past midlife, but there are going to be some things that help him understand these different questions that older, aging men who don't have a strong foundation, what they start to struggle with. But guys, help her with her response to him when this comes up so that she's not enabling this this little toddler to continue to have a temper tantrum.
Yes.
And I hope that you are able to address it not when it's just happening, because I don't think he's receptive to all these different ways that you've tried, and you've tried a lot. But addressing it when it's not happening at a time when he is more receptive to you, to let him know how much it hurts you, it scares you, and you need something different from him about it. I think you need him to get into structured help for it so that he can find out the roots of the anger that Steve is talking about, so that he can really work on them to resolve the anger that's coming to the surface. But I would have you make a strong request, and depending on his reaction, move it to a requirement. I think you may also have to separate yourself more from him than you are when he becomes that angry. But again, let him know in advance. So it may even have to be, I'm going to have to leave the house for the night. I'm going to go sleep at my sister's house. I'm going to go sleep somewhere else. And I'll come back afterwards. But I'm not willing to continue to tolerate this. It makes me think about how the Bible tells us that if we rescue an angry man, we just have to do it again and again and again. And I wonder if you're stuck as that recipient of his anger, that cycle of his anger. I think he needs to lose more of your presence to be able to be motivated enough to change this.
Thoughts here that she could take with her, because I don't want her lack of response to be any kind of enabling of him to continue to be. Because we know that rage growing, it can really become quite destructive. What do you think?
You're going to have to set a boundary that scares him, and you can do what Alice said and give him one warning. Next time you do this, I won't be here when you come home after work. You can give him a warning. If he can tolerate that, I agree with Alice. You don't want to approach him when he's super angry. But the answer is he blows up at you, and then you're just not home when he comes home from work, and he has no idea where you are. Your kids know where you are, and so he has to get scared and know that you're not going to put up with that anymore, and that you really mean it. and that his behavior is going to cause a reaction in you that is equally as severe to really put him on notice that you may not treat me like this. And unless you do something like that, I grew up in a home like this, and you know, because it was never confronted, it went on for decades and decades and decades and decades. So unless somebody does that, and I wished as a child I would have been taken by the hand from the parent that was, you know, on the receiving end of all that and just said, let's get out of here.
And, you know, actually, last night there was a time like this, and I just said, you know, I'm very tired, I'm going to bed, and I let it go. And then this morning I was able to talk to him about it, and he was very remorseful, and he said, you didn't deserve that. But it doesn't always happen that way. You know, sometimes.
Well, let me tell you this. You know, when he says something like, I feel bad about that, you might want to say this. You know, I think if you don't like being so angry and out of control, once you start looking at what you're so afraid of at this age in your life, you might find some relief. Honey, what are you so?
Okay.
What do you think you are afraid of? Anger doesn't just come out of nowhere. What are you struggling with, honey, that would cause you to do something to the person that's so on your side and that you would regret the next morning? Let's deal with the fear. What are you afraid of?
I never thought of the fear.
Well, it's there.
He sometimes says, I'm really trying. And I almost think it's chemical, you know, sometimes.
Well, you know, trying harder makes trying harder. He needs to get some help. Honey, you've tried. If you could have solved this on your own, that big brain of yours could have figured it out, you would have done that. So now let's get some help. We'll be back right after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay in the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you a set of 4 devotionals, 100 Days of Character, Peace, Prayer, and the newly released 100 Days of Healing. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
As many of you know, we really love to get behind things that transform people's lives, that can make an impact. And we're talking about something that goes beyond what we can do here. It's a different form. It's a movie. It's called I Still Believe. And it's brought to you by that number one independent movie from 2018, the one that we loved it, we supported it, and I can only imagine just changed a lot of people's lives, and we were behind that one, and we're behind this one, and joining me right now is John Irwin. John, welcome. So glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, and yes, thank you so much for the support of I Can Only Imagine. It was just unbelievable to see the difference that film made, the millions and millions of people that it touched, and honestly, I've never in my career seen God work in Hollywood like he's working right now. Doors are just flying open, and it's just a watershed moment of favor for Christianity in the entertainment industry.
We love being your partner, and of course you have a partnership with your brother Andrew. You're known as the Irwin Brothers, and in this one, you know, you're the director and co-writer. And I want to highlight one thing. I went to see this with Solomon. We love this movie, and it really does appeal to, let's just say, a young adult, older child, young adult mentality that some of the other films don't. I really think if you've got like a 20-year-old, 24-year-old, this could be the movie that could make a difference in their life. They could connect with them. Is that the intent or part of the intent there?
That is absolutely intentional. I think one of our dreams and goals is to create entertainment experiences that multiple generations will love. There's so much that tears the family apart. We want to create experiences that unite generations together. There's a big difference between a movie that the entire family can watch and a movie that the entire family will enjoy together. Those are two very different things. Yeah. So what we try to do is we try to create experiences that, you know, a mom could see with her daughter. You know, we really want to connect with this generation, and we want to provide tools for people to connect with this generation. So I would say, if you love I Can Only Imagine, you're going to love I Still Believe. I think it's better. I think it's a step forward. But it's also a step further into an audience that we really want to connect with. And that began with casting KJ Apa. And joining, you know, we had some titans in the film. Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan, and Such a Great American, Shania Twain. But we cast KJ, and that's really the first time I've really felt old, because I've not had, you know, tween and teen girls chase an actor down the street right in front of me before or spontaneously melt and start weeping. But KJ has about 20 million fans on his social platforms, and he really is a teen heartthrob. His fan base is incredible.
For the parents that don't know, how would they or how would their kids know of KJ? Because
KJ is the lead in the show called Riverdale, which is sort of like the 90210 or the Friends of this generation. It's just incredibly popular. Teenage girls specifically are just obsessed with KJ. We see that as an opportunity to take all of that equity and give them a selfless, beautiful, God-honoring love story. And KJ has an incredible character. He is an incredible man of faith, and he wants to share that. And so it's exciting to plow some new ground. And I would just like to say, everyone that has supported our films, this is an opportunity for you to connect with your kids, to connect with your youth group, your teenager you have access to or influence of or a relationship with. This is an opportunity to connect with them in a whole new way around a movie that you're going to love together. And that was very intentional.
Well, I'm glad that you went that direction. And I want to recommend this movie to folks. And I want to recommend that, just like you're saying, if you're involved in a youth group, or you've got a small group, or you've got kids, get some other kids together, get the group together, and go see. It's in 3/20/20 is when it is out. It's on the 20th. That's the release date. And you know, it, I'll tell you, going to see it sometime, that's good. Going to see it on the day it comes out, that is great. It really does have more of an impact, doesn't it?
It does, actually. And by the way, on the release date, this is exciting news. We've actually moved the film back. The release date of the film is 1 week earlier. It's the 13th of March. And one of the things that's happening is, for the first time ever, IMAX has come on board. And I Still Believe will be the first faith film to be released in IMAX, the biggest sort of, you know, that's typically reserved for superhero movies. And it's the biggest stage that our industry has to offer. And so the fact that a company with the legitimacy of IMAX is also coming on board for the release is so exciting. But it means that we've moved the release date up to the 13th, so you can see it a week early. And it's very, very exciting.
All right. We believe in that movie. It opens tomorrow. Please go see it on opening day. It'll make a great difference. Boy, I'll tell you, I think this is what we've been looking for a movie that could make a difference for our young people. Let's go to Michelle. El Segundo, California, podcast is where she listens. How you doing? Michelle,
hello.
How are you? Yeah, how could we help today?
Good, thank you. I don't know if the screener can read the question for me, because I'm driving at the moment.
Okay. Well, do you have a question for us at all?
Yes.
What is the question for us?
Okay. So I have a good friend of mine that has asked me to be one of her bridesmaids.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a close friend of mine. I've known her for a long time. But I'm not sure if it's a good thing to participate as a bridesmaid if she's living with her fiancé at the moment. And I don't know if, like, in a way I'll be endorsing it or approving of it. So I'm a little bit mixed up with that decision.
Okay. Let's ask Mylon and Alice what they think about something like this. Pretty tricky for a lot of people in different areas. Alice, let's start with you. What are you thinking?
Michelle, is your friend a believer?
Yes.
And is her fiancé also?
Yes.
And have you already expressed your concern about her behavior versus her beliefs with her in a loving way?
I have not.
Okay.
Because I'm a little bit intimidating addressing it.
So I think that as believers, we do have that responsibility. We're actually will be held responsible if we don't say something in love, presenting it with truth and love. But I have to admit, I was in the situation that your friend is in. I was living with my husband before we got married, and I was a believer too. And I think I would have appreciated a loving friend bringing me that concern, not in condemnation, but to lift me up into what I knew my beliefs to be, but I wasn't living by. But if it had been done in love, I think that I could have accepted it. So I think you have two different ways you could go with whether or not to be a bridesmaid. In some of these situations, it is better to say, I can't be a bridesmaid because I can't endorse that you two are living together, but I will go to your marriage and I will celebrate it with you. But I have to express my concern first and my reason for not wanting to be a bridesmaid. And I do this because I love you and because I care about you.
Okay. Mylon, you have a perspective on this. They're living together as engaged folks.
Well, I would agree with Alice that, you know, to simply make a statement by refusing to be in the wedding feels severe, you know, if you haven't done what Alice said, and I love your point, Alice, that I'm just going to say, you know, this is troubling to me, and have you thought about this, and that it is against our faith, and what are your thoughts on this, and to ask questions of her rather than to just drop a hammer and make a statement, but to really inquire and share in a loving way your concerns. And based upon that, then I would make a decision how much you want to participate.
Because, you know, you never know what the actual reason might be. And there could be anything of them saying, well, you know, we didn't want to tell anybody, but we did a private ceremony and we actually are married. Or they might say, well, we sleep in separate bedrooms, we're celibate, but I lost my job and I have no money, and we know it maybe isn't the best thing, but you just all sorts of answers that you might get. And so when you give them the opportunity to respond, I think everybody wins from that rather than just make a judgment. And I love it that you care about what's right, not only in your thoughts about marriage and all, but you're getting advice because you want to get it right. And anything that we do, you know, the less judgmental, the more mercy-filled, compassionate we can be, then whatever we stand up for, whatever choice, it's got credibility because there's love and compassion behind it.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterman here. Talking with Michelle. I believe Alice would like to add something here.
Well, I was thinking about how many parents call in and they're in a similar position as Michelle and they're concerned about what their adult children are doing. And I wish somebody who knew my beliefs had asked me, how can I help you realign with your beliefs? Can I pray for you? Can I help hold you accountable? Can I check in with you about this later? Because I was very conflicted in living with my fiance before we got married, but I was also pretty isolated in what I was doing. My parents knew, and they enforced some consequences to try to help me change. But I needed the love, and I needed someone to come alongside me and say, let me walk with you. What can I do for you? So consider that, offering that question, Michelle, to your friend.
Treat you like an adult. That's really good. All right, Michelle, I'm going to send you a copy of, how about I send you How We Love. I'll send you two copies. You have one? And give one to them, because I'm going to tell you, they're going to need it. It's just such a great way to go into a marriage, understanding this stuff. Let's go to Kay Wilmington, North Carolina, listens on the New Life app. Hi, Kay. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. What can we help you with? What's going on?
I have a question. I just want to know if I should confront my son's, I don't know what you call him, a person who's molested him. I'm wondering if I should confront him to let him know that I know what he had done.
Okay. Why wouldn't you just, like, call the police and have them get him to a place where he could no longer molest anyone?
Well, this has been, like, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found out about it in 2012.
Hmm. Well, I think he could. Breaks your heart knowing what?
Knowing that he's going around and he don't know that I haven't confronted him about it, because he was my old boyfriend.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the question you have for us is: should you call him and confront him about it?
Yes, and he's married. He married a woman that had a child that was already her child before they got married, and he was only like 4 years old when they got married.
Okay. Well, let's see. Mylon, Alice, what do you guys think? What do you think her best course of action is at this point?
Kay, does the perpetrator, does he have a minor child still?
No, he's never had any children of his own. This was a stepchild.
Is the stepchild still a minor?
Oh, no. He's grown. He's probably close to 29, 30 years old now. But I talked to his grandmother, and his grandmother said he's very isolated. He don't like to be around people. He's very shy, timid, like he don't want to confront people or be around people.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it, why he would be that way?
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. So, it really concerns me. And the main concern is to let the mother know that he molested my children.
Well, I think that's important to really indicate here. And this is perplexing, admittedly, only because of the ripple effect can be profound. But I would make sure your son knew that ahead of time that you were going to speak to your old boyfriend, which was the perpetrator, and that you were going to basically tell him that you know. And I, to answer your original question, I wouldn't hesitate to do that. Secondly, I would then confer with your son, and I would make sure that his wife also knows, so that they can take caution and ask the question, if this man did this to your son, would this happen also to another woman's son? And to really couch it in that phraseology and to tell your, I'm trying to get all the people right, your ex-boyfriend's wife with the already son, therefore his stepson, I would tell her. I would make sure she knew, because perhaps this young man who's isolated and quiet and doesn't trust people is that way for a reason. And, you know, maybe he needs the freedom to be able to tell someone that, yes, that happened to me. Odds are it did happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, should I confront the whole family or just the perpetrator, the pimp, whatever his name is, and then the wife?
Well, I would talk to the wife, and I would talk to both independently or separately. I would talk to the wife and let her know that, and I would tell your son, and I'd tell your ex-boyfriend.
And, Kate, you might want to identify support for yourself,
yep.
that somebody come with you, a friend, yep. your husband perhaps, so that you're not alone in doing this. You are brave, though. We have so many callers who will not do what you're so willing to do for your son now that you know. Thank you for that.
And, you know, as I said in the beginning of the program, sometimes there's a phrase, and I think the phrase, it's time, it is time that the reality of this be dealt with. And I'm glad that you have the courage to do that. I will send you a copy of Take Your Life Back, and I hope that that's going to help you with some things, and you will continue to be courageous in doing the very next right thing. Well, as we wrap up this broadcast, I want to be sure that you know that we've got one of the most powerful transformational experiences coming up here, and that experience is starting tomorrow. It's in Southern California. It's Finding Freedom, and I really believe that God can use that event to set you free from something you've been struggling with for ages. We also do other workshops, nothing more powerful than our Intimacy in Marriage Intensive that sold out last time. So you'll want to sign up for that very quickly coming up here in July. Every Man's Battle is every single month. So please call us. Get involved with something that could change your life. If you don't need a workshop, we've got clinicians all over this country that could help you at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. At the same time, we need your support for all that we do here. And if you will support us, we'll send you, like, let's say you want to join Club New Life. $30 a month is all it is. And we send you a thank you gift, which includes a Life Recovery Bible, the General Workbook, and a journal that takes you through four seasons of recovery, and then four additional journals, one on grieving, one on divorce, another one on eating disorders, and another on sexual integrity. If you don't need them all, you've got somebody that does. Our way of saying thank you for being part of Club New Life. And if you give us a gift of any amount, we put together some great, great truths on coming near to God, our different talks on coming near to God by me, Dr. Alice Benton, Chris Williams, Becky Brown. Those are our way of saying thank you for supporting what we do. Now, if you need what we do, that same number of support is 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and you just call us, and we're going to give you the very best direction that we can possibly do. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You know, Jeremiah 6:16 says, stop at the crossroads, look around, find the old godly path, walk in its footsteps, and you will find lasting peace. If you're not at peace, time to stop, look around, pick up the phone, call us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We will help you. Bless you. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.